end of simply telling the truth. Van Zyl answered on the first ring, and Poe told him what he wanted. The director didn't waste time on amateur dramatics. He was a wily man, and still a great cop. He asked Poe some searching questions, and he answered them as honestly as he could. When he was finished, Van Zyl went silent. After a few moments, the director spoke. "Are you sure, Poe?"
"No, sir,"
Van Zyl grunted.
"But you're as sure as you can be."
How sure was he? Was it an educated guess, or was it one last desperate grab by a man out of options? He mentally reviewed what he knew.
"Poe,"
Van Zyl growled.
"Sir," he said finally, "I am as sure as I can be. And there's no other way."
"I don't believe so, sir."
"Fine," he sighed. "Give me what you have."
"It's a 12-page form, sir," Poe said. "I'll fill it in, then email it to you."
"You're at home, right?"
"I am, sir."
"By the time you get to that hotel of yours to use their Wi-Fi, you'll have wasted half an hour," Van Zyl said. "I assume you want this to happen sooner rather than later?"
Despite being on the phone, Poe nodded.
"Yes, sir."
"I'll fill it in, then. You need my signature anyway, and if you want this expedited, I'm going to need that extra half hour to get the right people out of bed."
"What do you need from me, sir?"
"I suggest you get some sleep, Poe. I'll call you if I need additional information, otherwise you can expect a copy of the facts to go to the hotel."
It was only after he'd hung up that Poe realized that Van Zyl hadn't referred to Flynn once. Poe was glad. He hadn't had to lie. And although it would be tricky, if everything went in his favor, he might get away without anyone else finding out. 2 hours later, and Poe hadn't heard anything more. He decided to go to the hotel and wait. He had a stomachful of nervous energy, and the pages of the novel he was reading weren't registering. Sleep was out of the question. He wasn't expecting the facts that early, but he could check if Bradshaw was still up. If she were, she might be willing to find some dirt on Sharples. He hadn't finished with that prick yet. He put on his coat and said to Edgar,
"You want to go and see Tilly?"
The spaniel's tail started wagging. Apparently, he did. Poe told the receptionist he was waiting for a fax. He asked her to ring Bradshaw's room. She wasn't answering. He checked the clock in the office. It was 10 o'clock, and he suspected she was asleep with the phone off the hook. Just because he was an insomniac, it didn't mean everyone else was. He was about to see if he could beg a coffee when Darren, one of the hotel's barmen, ran up to the desk.
"Where's the duty manager?" he asked.
"Dealing with the guests in the bathhouse,"
the receptionist replied.
"Why?"
The old bathhouse had been exactly what it sounded like, a bathhouse, a detached building at the front of the hotel. It was now used for guests who wanted additional privacy. Darren looked up, agitated.
"What's up?"
the receptionist asked.
"There's some trouble in the bar."
Poe didn't work for the local constabulary anymore, but he was still a cop at heart.
"Show me,"
he said. His tone didn't invite discussion. He followed the barman through to the main bar area. It was old-fashioned, a bit worn, resembled a working men's club, and attracted a strange mix of clientele. When Poe was having a drink in the hotel, he tended to use the smaller bar to the left of reception. He only used the main bar when he needed the free Wi-Fi.
"I've asked them to leave her alone, sir," Darren said, "but they told me to fuck off."
Poe looked where he was pointing. His breathing quickened. The animal inside him stirred.
And Bradshaw was just starting to come out of her shell.
She was seated near the window, trying to play a game on her laptop. Poe recognized the headphone she'd slip on when she conversed with other players. 3 men surrounded her. They were wearing name tags. He hated conference-goers. As soon as they were away from home, they seemed to think the rules of society no longer applied, and these clowns had clearly been drinking all day. As Poe watched, one of them lifted the headphones off Bradshaw's head and whispered something into her ear.
"Stop it,"
she said, snatching them. Her eyes were wide as she stared at her laptop. The man who'd removed her headphones did so again. Bradshaw again took them back. All three men laughed. Another man pushed a bottle of lager to her mouth and tried to encourage her to take a drink. She shook her head and it spilt down her T-shirt. The men laughed again.
"Shall I call the police, Mr. Poe?"
"I've got this, Darren."
He walked over. One of the men noticed him. He whispered something to the others and they turned. All three looked like they'd been caught wearing their mother's knickers. Bradshaw looked small and fragile, yet there was steel. She wasn't crying, and she wasn't screaming for help. She was facing up to them.
"What's up, boys?" Poe asked.
His voice was calm, but there was no mistaking his intent. When Bradshaw saw him, he knew the look of relief on her face would stay with him forever. The man who'd been trying to take Bradshaw's headphones said,
"Just having a bit of fun with Mrs. Mouse here."
He had a southern accent and was slurring. Poe ignored him.
"You okay, Tilly?"
She nodded. Her face was paler than usual, but she was bearing up. She had guts. He'd give her that. He'd known cops who'd have bottled it by now.
"Tilly? How come this streak of piss knows your name but you won't tell old Carl?"
the drunk asked.
"It's almost as if you don't like me. I don't like it when people don't like me."
"Jesus. Why don't you go and wait by the bar, Tilly? I'll be with you in a second," Poe said.
Bradshaw tried to stand, but the man who called himself Carl put her hand on her shoulder and pushed her down.
"You're going nowhere, darling."
The animal inside Poe got to its feet. It cracked its knuckles and rolled its shoulders. He knew he could stop the situation from escalating by producing his NCA ID card. He also knew he wasn't going to do that. Some lessons have to be delivered physically.
"Everything's fine, Tilly," he said. "These men are about to leave."
"Are we now?"
Carl said. He stood to emphasize his height and bulk. He grinned when he saw Poe sizing him up.
"Why don't you fucking jog on, mate?" he said. "I'm not leaving until I've found out whether this frigid bitch spits or swallows."
He lifted an empty bottle by the neck. The threat was clear. Poe turned to face him, but he was speaking to all three.
"Put down your drinks. Leave now. Don't ever come back."
His voice was a growl. The man, who was comparatively sober, Poe could see a name tag with the words "team leader," said,
"Come on, let's go."
Poe knew he'd recognize trouble even if his drunken colleagues hadn't.
"Sit down," Carl hissed. "We're going nowhere. I'm teaching this northern monkey a lesson."
Poe smiled politely.
"Look, you cunt. You're nausing me right up. Fuck off!"
Poe continued to say nothing, smiling. Carl's forehead was now beaded with sweat.
"This is your last chance,"
Carl said.
"Just walk away."
"Last chance? Whatever happened to the first chance?"
"I'm counting to five," Poe said. "That's how long you have."
"Carl,"
said one of his friends,
"let's go."
Carl was past the point of no return.
"And what happens at five?"
"One," Poe said.
"I'm shitting myself,"
he sneered.
"I know," said Poe. "Two."
Men like Carl seldom had a plan B. Poe said,
"Three. Four."
Carl's brow furrowed. Poe had backed him into a corner. He was going to fight.
Good.
Poe might have been giving away height and weight, but he'd been a Cumbrian cop for almost a decade. Gutter fighting came easily, and he knew what to do when someone was threatening to glass him. With muscles moving ahead of his mind, Poe grabbed Carl's hand. Carl tightened his grip. Big mistake. Poe wasn't trying to disarm him. He wanted him holding it. He lifted Carl's hand, then slammed it onto the table. The bottle shattered. Shards of glass flew across the table. Apart from Bradshaw lifting her laptop out of the way, no one moved. The few people left in the bar looked across. They went back to their drinks when Poe glared at them. Poe continued to grip Carl's hand. He began trembling. His expression changed from lager-fueled rage to agonizing pain. His face whitened. He began to whimper. Breaking a bottle to use as a weapon isn't like it is in the movies. Banging it against a table to leave a nice smooth neck to grip and a bunch of deadly shards to stab someone with doesn't work in real life. As Carl had just found out, glass is brittle and unpredictable. When it shatters, you have no control over how much of it shatters. Carl had been holding a deadly weapon. Now he was gripping a handful of razor-sharp glass. Blood poured from between his fingers. Poe squeezed. Carl screamed. Poe knew the risk of permanent damage was real, but he didn't care. You didn't trade punches with people like Carl. And they needed to understand that retaliation would be met with a disproportionate, life-changing response. Poe brought his hand down low. Carl dropped to his knees like he'd been shot. He screamed again. With his spare hand, Poe retrieved his ID card and flipped it open.
"Evening, gents," he said. "My name is Detective Sergeant Poe, and the lady you've just assaulted is my friend. We both work for the National Crime Agency. Now, do we all agree that you three are in deep shit?"
The soberest man nodded. Poe leaned in to read his name tag.
"MWC Computer Engineering. Never heard of you."
"We're a company who..."
"I don't need part two, dickhead," Poe said. "But if Carl here ever wants to use that hand again, he needs a hospital right now. Not in the morning when you've all sobered up."
The silence was broken by Carl sniffling.
"No, please fuck off out of this hotel."
Guiding Carl by his ruined hand, he led them back through the bar into the reception area. The sober man turned towards the stairs.
"Where the hell are you going?" Poe asked.
"I'm getting my bag."
"No, son," Poe said. "I told you to fuck off, and that means now, not when it suits you."
"But our stuff, I have computers up..."
He trailed off under Poe's gaze. Poe called to the receptionist.
"Zoe, can you order these gentlemen a taxi? Tell the driver he needn't bother driving down to the hotel. These three idiots will meet it on the A6. I think they could use the fresh air."
He turned to the three men.
"The taxi will take you to hospital. I'd get a move on if I were you. It's at least a mile to the main road."
Poe let go of Carl's hand, and they staggered into the car park.
"Before you go, how much money do you have?"
"You're robbing us?"
the sober one asked.
Poe said, "Carl's blood's on the carpet in the bar. I don't think the hotel should have to pay for it. Do you?"
Bradshaw was still in the bar. She was trembling, but smiled when Poe walked back in. She was stroking Edgar, who had been quiet throughout the whole shebang. He ordered drinks. The barman didn't want his money.
"You okay, Tilly?" he asked. "Sorry you had to see that."
"Why do you keep rescuing me, Poe? That's twice now."
Poe laughed. Bradshaw didn't. She was being serious.
"It was hardly that," he replied. "And anyway, I can't stand bullies."
"Oh,"
she said. She looked a little bit deflated.
"And come on, Tilly. We may have had a rough start, but you're my friend. You must realize that."
She didn't reply, and for a moment Poe thought he'd said the wrong thing. A single tear was running down her face.
"Tilly?"
"I've never had a friend before," she said.
He couldn't think of anything to say, so he settled for,
"Well, you do now."
"Thank you, Poe."
"Anyway," he said, "it's your turn to rescue me next."
"I will."
She frowned.
"Spit or swallow what, Poe? Whatever did he mean?"
He was saved by the receptionist. She'd entered the bar area with a sheaf of papers. He raised his eyebrows and she nodded. His fax had arrived. He read the cover sheet. For some reason, it was happening at 5:18, but the preparatory work would begin in the next few hours. He wasn't required to be there for that, but he wanted to be.
"I'm going to have to get away, Tilly." He stood, all thoughts of asking her to delve into Francis Sharples forgotten. "You going to be okay?"
"Yes, Poe."
He paused.
"And try not to worry about those idiots, Tilly. If it wasn't you, it would have been someone else. Look at it this way. You're in the NCA. Imagine what it would have been like for someone who wasn't. Look at it as a glass half-full kind of thing."
Bradshaw removed her glasses and polished them with a special cloth she kept in her bag. When they were back on, she tucked some hair behind her ear and said,
"The glass isn't half-full, Poe, and neither is it half-empty."
"What is it, then?"
She grinned.
"It's twice as big as it needs to be."
She was going to be fine.
Chapter 20 Parkside was one of two cemeteries the district council ran in the Kendall area. Poe had been to funerals there, so didn't need directions. It was huge, extended to both sides of Parkside Road, and was sectioned according to denomination and religion. He needed K section. It was the furthest from the chapel and the car park. And why wouldn't it be? No one would ever visit it. Finding the grave was more difficult than he imagined it would be. The cloud covering, while keeping the ambient temperature warm, made the blanket of blackness shrouding the cemetery complete. It robbed him of his senses, and he cursed himself for not having had the foresight to bring a working torch. He had one in his car, but it was little more than a tube for carrying dead batteries. The Blackberry's torch was barely making a dent in the darkness. After half an hour of stumbling, tripping over exposed tree roots and walking through cobwebs, he eventually found K section. Some of the sections were situated in light woodland, but K section was in one of the more open areas. He began reading headstones. It was an old section of the grounds, and most of the graves were simple monuments, weathered stones with fading inscriptions, names, dates, and simple messages of love. The occasional military rank. Some were clean, and others were stained green. Half a dozen or so had the full moss overcoat. Some of the older ones leaned together like old friends. He shuddered. How could a place be so full and yet so empty at the same time? Eventually, he found it. It was at the very edge of K section, in a small area he hadn't noticed earlier, hidden from view by a large mausoleum. The reason he'd missed it earlier was because none of the graves had headstones. The area was slightly covered by a maple tree. He looked down and saw 7 wooden plaques in a neat row. Poe knew this was what he'd been looking for. Logic, and in this part of case section, logic probably did play a part, dictated he should start at the end of the row. He could smell freshly turned earth, and when he shone his light on the plaque to the far right, he found what he'd come for. The plaque simply said, "Unknown Male." The date of interment was there in smaller writing, along with an 8-digit reference number that matched the one Reed had told him. The number that was now on the fax Van Zyl had sent. Poe stepped back and viewed the surrounding area. He didn't know what he was looking for, and found nothing amiss. It was one of the reasons he'd wanted to get there before the council cavalry arrived. He wanted to look at the area before it was molested and trampled on. See if it had been interfered with. It didn't look as though it had. The grave of Tolland Man was fresh, but not new fresh. If he were going to find anything, it was below ground. He sat down to wait. He checked his watch. It wouldn't be long. The environmental health officer was called Freya Ackley. She had a shock of ginger hair and spoke with a Newcastle accent. She'd seemed relieved someone had been there to meet her.
D.S. Poe.
Poe showed her his ID.
"You have things to do before the circus starts," she nodded.
"I'm supposed to get 5 days to do my checks. I was walking by South Lakeland District Council's Director of Environmental Health 2 hours ago and told the Ministry of Justice had a job that couldn't wait."
She wasn't moaning. She was nervous. Poe could tell it was the first exhumation she'd officiated. She removed a large file from her rucksack and went to the summary sheet.
"I need to find the grave," she said.
"Over there," Poe pointed. "New one, on the end."
Ackley removed a document from the file's inside pocket. It was the same one Poe had. She walked over to the grave and shone her torch down onto the wooden plug. She checked it three times, then called Poe over.
"I can confirm that this is the grave on the exhumation order."
"Agreed," Poe said.
"And can you confirm the reason for the exhumation?"
Poe read it off the fax he was holding.
"To assist in an ongoing serious investigation."
"And the reason for urgency?"
It was the same reason. Poe repeated it. She stared, but Poe didn't elaborate. Ackley went back to her form.
"As the bodies are John Doe, there isn't a family to seek permission from, and I can confirm that this section of the cemetery is neither consecrated ground nor a registered war grave. I can also confirm that the body can be disinterred without disturbing other remains, and that the authority controlling the cemetery has no objection."
"We ready to go, then?"
"We are, D.S. Poe. My people will be here soon. We'll start at 5:18.
Poe looked at her quizzically. He'd noticed the weird time on the exhumation order earlier.
"It's the official time for sunrise. If we do this during daylight, we don't need specialist lighting. And that means I don't need health and safety to certify the generator, the lighting rigs and the cables. Reduces the paperwork and the amount of people who need to be here."
A council employee who didn't like bureaucracy. Poe liked Freya Ackley.
Chapter 21. At 4:30, the gravediggers arrived, three of them. They were prepared for the task in hand. They moved floral tributes from the adjacent graves and erected blue plastic screens to ensure privacy. With the preparation done, they disappeared, returning with protective clothing for everyone. There'd be no more people coming. There'd been a thorough forensic post-mortem completed, so Poe hadn't needed, and wouldn't have wanted, crime scene investigators. This was all about satisfying his curiosity. If he spotted anything out of the ordinary, he'd stop it all and call Flynn. As the exhumation order only gave authority for a graveside examination of the remains, two of the gravediggers went for Tolland Mann's new coffin, a large casket called a shell. It was made of wood and tarred on the inside. It had a zinc liner and a leak-proof plastic membrane. The remains of Tolland Mann, his coffin, and anything else found in the grave would be placed inside the shell, sealed, and reburied in the original grave. Ackley was required to approve the shell, a task that would ordinarily have been completed in her allotted 5 days. She checked the new nameplate on the lid to ensure it matched the one on the grave and the exhumation order. She asked Poe to double-check. He did. They matched. They were ready. They only needed to wait until daylight. Ackley took the time to deliver her required briefing. As the environmental health officer, it was her job to ensure that respect for the deceased was maintained. More importantly, it was also her responsibility to ensure that public health was protected during the exhumation. She briefed Poe and the gravediggers on the risk of infection from human remains and the soil surrounding graves. Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, tetanus, even smallpox were transmittable and were still viable after interment. Ackley was reading from prepared notes, and Poe was paying as much attention as he would a pre-flight safety demonstration. Tolland Mann had been buried in salt for decades and had been tested and autopsied. There was no risk. He doubted he'd been in the ground long enough to even start decomposing. Poe glanced at his watch. It was officially morning. 5:18 had happened. He closed his eyes and tried to calm himself. Tried not to imagine ex-cop reduced to grave robbing as the lead in tomorrow's newspapers. It was at that point that something leaned into him and snarled,
"What the fuck do you think you're doing, Poe?"
into his ear. Poe's eyes snapped open. Flynn was glaring at him. He'd never seen her so angry. He started to speak, but she cut him off.
"How dare you?"
"Steph, listen."
"Don't, Poe," she snapped. "Just fucking don't."
Poe did.
I spoke to Van Zyl last night. He authorized it and chased everyone to get it done quickly, he said. I'm sorry, but here we are.
You went above my head.
Her voice was low. Poe shrugged.
I'd hardly call it that.
What would you call it?
Poe didn't have an answer, and he had no intention of hiding behind banal platitudes. He'd have been furious if the roles had been reversed, but the immolation man hadn't carved her name into someone's chest. He didn't have the luxury of kowtowing to procedural niceties.
It's me he's taunting, Steph, not you, not Gamble. And you know who I am, why Van Zyl wanted me in the first place. I go where the evidence takes me, and it's taken me here.
Fuck off, Poe, she growled. That's binary thinking, and it's unworthy of you. It's not as simple as that. There's a right way and a wrong way to do things, and this is absolutely the wrong way. What's DCS Gamble going to say when he finds out the NCA has exhumed a body in his investigation without telling him? He's going to go ballistic.
Blame me, Poe replied.
Blame? Who the fuck else would I blame?
Fair point. This was the Peyton Williams case all over again. Even when he was right, he was wrong. He handed over the faxed copy of the exhumation order.
And Van Zyl was okay excluding me from my own investigation.
She seemed to have softened slightly. Probably recognized they were going to exhume the body whether she liked it or not. Professional curiosity was blunting the indignation.
Honestly, Steph, I don't think he realized. I think he assumed I was acting on your instructions.
Poe didn't think that at all. Van Zyl was an intelligent and pragmatic man. If he hadn't mentioned Flynn, it was because he hadn't wanted to mention her. He hadn't wanted to hear Poe lie. He'd almost certainly realized he was going rogue, and was probably glad Poe hadn't dug up the grave himself. But he wouldn't want to subvert the chain of command too much. There would be repercussions. He'd have to come down on Flynn's side when the body was back in the ground.
I'm assuming Van Zyl called you.
She nodded.
First thing, told me my exhumation order was down in reception. You could imagine my surprise.
Poe could. He almost smiled, but held it in. Now wasn't the time to be conciliatory. Flynn needed to stay mad at him for a bit longer. She said,
Look, Poe, when all this is over, you could very well be back in charge, and if that happens, it's fine. I'll be glad to be your sergeant again. But until that happens, can you please, for the love of God, just give me the respect I gave you?
Was that what she really thought of him? That he'd circumnavigated her because he didn't respect her? That he was struggling, reporting to a former subordinate? He hoped not, because nothing could be further from the truth. Flynn had been an awful sergeant, but she was shaping up to be a great DI. She had the potential to be the best boss he'd ever had. It was right that she was angry. He told her as much, and was happy when she reddened.
This is all on me, Steph. When Gamble finds out, I will hold my hands up. Tell him you weren't involved.
Fuck you, Poe, she sighed. We're in this shit show together.
She looked at her watch.
Come on. It's time.
The earth was soft and damp, and the gravediggers made it look effortless. With their overlong spades, they moved the dirt in quick, economical movements. Poe had no idea how deep graves were supposed to be. 6 feet under sprang to mind, but he didn't know if that was from the top or the bottom of the coffin, or just a phrase with no bearing on modern graveyard regulations. After 10 minutes of digging, they ditched their spades, and one of them had got in and was moving the last of the mud with his hands. After a few moments, he'd exposed wood. The webbing straps used to lower the coffin were wet and dirty, but still in good condition. They hadn't been in the ground for long, and he passed them up to his colleagues. No point fitting new ones when the ones in situ were perfectly serviceable.
"We'll lift it out and place it directly into the shell, Sergeant Poe," Ackley said. "You can remove the lid and examine the contents from there. When you're finished, we'll widen the grave slightly and reinter."
The man who'd cleared the coffin and located the webbing straps grabbed the hand of his mate and climbed out of the grave. As he did so, part of the webbing caught on his leg. It caused him to slip, and he banged against the side of the coffin. The lid moved. That was odd. Coffin lids weren't simply popped on like the top on a tube of Pringles, were they? Weren't they supposed to be nailed down?
The lid. It's loose, Poe said.
They all peered into the grave. A sickly, sweet stench of putrefaction wafted up. Flynn's nose wrinkled in disgust.
What's that?
She removed a handkerchief from her pocket and held it across her mouth and nose. There was something wrong with the smell.
I don't know, but it's not coming from someone who's been in salt for about 30 years, Poe replied.
It was too organic. The man in the grave reached down to remove the coffin lid.
Stop!
Poe yelled. He reached down and grabbed the man's hand, hauled him up. He faced the three gravediggers.
I need you all to put down your spades and remove your protective clothing.
He turned to the environmental health officer.
You too, Freya. This isn't an exhumation site anymore. It's a crime scene.
Chapter 22. The body in the coffin wasn't the dried-out husk of the unidentified male they'd been expecting. It was another victim of the immolation man. Judging by the smell, it wasn't a new victim. It was as badly burned as the body Poe had seen in the circle at Cockermouth, but whereas that body had smelled disgusting but fresh, this one smelled disgusting and rotten.
It's the fifth victim, Poe said, or the fifth one we've found anyway.
Flynn didn't seem to be able to tear her eyes away from the blackened corpse in the grave.
I take it you believe me now when I say the two are linked.
What the hell's going on, Poe? And where the hell's Tolland Man?
Poe didn't have a clue. But Flynn had hit the nail on the head. The new victim being there was incidental and of little interest to them. That was a job for Gamble and the main investigation. Poe had no doubt that the immolation man's primary objective in replacing the body with another victim had little to do with mischief. It was to stop Poe finding out who Tolland Man was.
So why had he led him here at all?
Unless he hadn't been meant to get access to the coffin so quickly. Going through Van Zyl instead of the usual bureaucratic channels meant he'd got the exhumation order in hours rather than weeks. His insubordination with Flynn might have brought them an advantage they weren't supposed to have. And that meant he had a potential bridge to the truth. All he had to do was find a way of crossing it. An hour later, the Cumbrian team descended on the cemetery. Gamble and Reed arrived first, all suited and booted. Forensics and CSI were close behind. It wasn't long before the combined ensemble of a murder investigation had ruined K-section's tranquility. A forensic tent soon covered the grave. An inner cordon had been set around some gravestones, and an outer one around K-section. When Gamble realized what had happened, he turned red-faced with fury. Flynn stood up to him. She showed him the exhumation order. It didn't improve his mood. He snatched it off her and marched up to Poe.
What the hell is this?
Poe glanced at the top sheet. It was signed by the Ministry of Justice coroner and by the head of the cemetery's office in South Lakeland District Council. The reason for exhumation was listed as urgent examination of contents of coffin. More information was given, but the gist was that the NCA had reason to believe that evidence vital to the apprehension of a serial murderer was contained within the coffin. It was signed Edward Van Zyl, Director of Intelligence.
It's an exhumation order, sir.
I know what it fucking is, Poe, he snarled. Why's D.I. Flynn's name not on this? Why's your name listed under applicant?
Flynn walked over.
Perhaps I can explain, sir, she said. As I said earlier, Ian, the postcard Poe received yesterday led us to believe there was evidence in this grave vital to your investigation. I tried to ring, but couldn't get a signal. I knew you'd want us to get on it as soon as possible, so I went through my own director to get expedited permission. Thankfully, he was able to leap a few hurdles and buy us some extra days.
Gamble knew she was lying, but he also knew he'd been outflanked.
You bloody people!
After standing his ground for a moment, he said, "I want a full report uploaded to Holmes by midday, Detective Inspector Flynn." He turned to Poe and said, "And I want him off my investigation." When he was out of earshot, Flynn turned to him. "I'm sorry, Poe."
"What?"
he exclaimed. "He doesn't have the authority." "Director's orders. I've just spoken to Van Zyl. You went behind my back, and you went behind Gamble's back. He can't afford a fight with Cumbria, and politically, he can't insist they host you any more." His phone rang. It was Director Van Zyl. If Poe thought he was in for a phony bollocking over the chain of command, he was wrong.
"I spoke to HR yesterday, Sergeant Poe," Van Zyl said, without preamble. "It seems that because you hadn't contacted anyone during your suspension, and, more importantly, no one contacted you, you have accrued over 12 months' worth of leave. Now we can pay you for it, if you like, but if you were to verbally request some now, I'd look upon it favourably. I'm sure Detective Inspector Flynn would too."
Poe could only manage...
What?
"Do you want to take some leave?" Van Zyl said, speaking slowly. "It's either that or you're back in Hampshire today."
Yes, then."
"Good. That's settled, then. With immediate effect, you're on a month's leave."
"Why, sir?" Poe asked. But he was gone.
Poe stared at the phone in his hand. Flynn wandered up. Gamble was in tow.
"Why's he still here?"
Gamble barked.
"Sergeant Poe has been reassigned, sir," Flynn said. "But I understand he's taking some leave first. Is that right, Poe?"
He nodded. Gamble grunted in satisfaction before stomping off. Flynn and the director had figured a workaround that allowed Gamble to save face, but kept Poe in Cumbria. They wanted him working the case, but from now on it would be unofficial. Just as he preferred. He knew what he had to do. Scrolling through his phone's contact list, he went to his newest entry and pressed call. Considering it was still very early, it was answered immediately. The voice at the other end didn't sound in the least bit sleepy.
"How do you fancy some advanced field work, Tilly?"
Chapter 23 Poe dropped off Edgar, then picked up Bradshaw at the hotel's front door. He didn't bother turning off the car's engine. Bradshaw, a star in the making, had understood he was coming off night work, so had somehow rustled up fried egg rolls and a flask of coffee. Poe ate the rolls before sipping the hot drink until it was cool enough to gulp. The journey up the M6 took less than half an hour. By 8 in the morning, they were in Stanwix. Poe parked the car, and they headed up the steps of the townhouse. Poe pointed at the B. Phil after Francis Sharples's name and asked,
"You know what that means, Tilly?"
"Bachelor of Philosophy, Poe."
Poe shook his head.
"It means he's a cock."
He pressed the intercom button and didn't let up until a sleep-ridden voice answered,
"Yeah."
"See," Poe said.
After he told Sharples who was at the door, and after ignoring his protests about civil liberties being trampled on, they were let in. As before, he was waiting for them at the entrance to his flat. He'd either slept in his shorts or had managed to get dressed in the time it took them to walk up the stairs. Instead of the condescending smirk he'd worn last time, he was now struggling to hold a nervous smile. This time, Poe saw no reason to be nice. He wasn't leaving until Sharples told him everything.
"The information you're concealing, it's now part of a murder inquiry."
"I'm not conceal-"
"Piss off," Poe snapped. "I've been doing this job 15 years, and I've never seen a worse liar."
"How dare you!"
"Whatever."
Poe couldn't tell if Sharples was shocked at the change in tone, or the fact someone didn't believe him.
"You can be as pretend outraged as you want, Frankie. I'm about to arrest you for assisting an offender and perverting the course of justice."
Before Sharples could object, he added, "And at this stage, as you're the only person connected with the case who we know to be lying, I'm formally telling you that you are now considered a suspect in 5 murders. At the very least, you'll be convicted of joint enterprise." It was bullshit, but Poe was banking on knowing more about the law than Sharples did.
"Get dressed.
You're coming with me. Sharples was now shaking. Tears were in his eyes. Poe looked round the room. He'd been working on his book the night before. Or, at least he wanted to give the impression he'd been working on his book. A neat stack of paper was lined up next to his laptop. It was his manuscript, where anyone who visited would be able to see it, Poe noticed, and there seemed to be about 70 pages. He picked up the title sheet. The Increasing Relevance of Philosophy in a Smaller World.
Nice computer, Mr. Sharples, Bradshaw said, looking at his Apple laptop. This model's top of the range.
While they talked computers, Poe looked at the expensive decor in the expensive flat in the expensive part of town. He'd wanted to ask Sharples last time how an unpublished philosophy graduate afforded a place like this.
How did you pay for all this, Mr. Sharples?
His eyes dropped to the floor.
I can have a forensic accountant here in a matter of hours, Mr. Sharples. They'll go through everything, and I mean everything. Better by far if you tell me now.
Sharples mumbled something, but it was too quiet for Poe to hear. Bradshaw had, though.
He said he took something from the corpse.
Poe nodded.
And what would that have been?
A watch, he croaked.
Poe wasn't a fashion guru, but even he knew some watches were incredibly expensive.
Make and model?
1962 Breitling 765. The strap must have broken when I accidentally tipped the body on top of Derek. I didn't think. I put it in my pocket, to keep it safe.
To keep it safe?
Yes.
And what, you forgot you had it?
I did. When I found it later, I was scared the police might think I'd stolen it.
Imagine that, Poe said.
So where is it? He didn't have an answer. Poe suspected he'd sold it. Sharples continued to stare at the floor.
I said...
I don't have it any more.
I want the serial number and photographs, Poe said.
He turned to Bradshaw. It was what you did when you wanted something checking on the internet. She was already on her phone.
Value?
Poe asked her.
A Breitling 1962 model would cost approximately £10,000, Poe, she replied.
She seemed to be enjoying her first trip out into the field. At some point, Poe would have to explain that it wasn't official. Let her decide whether she wanted to carry on or not, but not just yet. Poe turned to Sharples and asked, "Who did you sell it to?"
"I want a deal,"
Poe snorted. Even Bradshaw giggled.
"You watch too much shit television, Mr. Sharples," he said. "This isn't America. There'll be no deal. What there might be is mitigation. That's where the judge looks at something good you might have done instead of just the bad. And the only way you'll get mitigation is if I get hold of that fucking watch. Now tell me who you sold it to."
"I can't," he whispered. "I sold it on a specialist watch site to an anonymous collector in the States."
"Tilly?"
"Please, can you move out of the way, Mr. Sharples?"
she said, as she pushed past Sharples and powered up his Mac.
"Password, please,"
he told her. While Bradshaw searched the computer, Poe asked,
"How much did you get for it?"
"Certainly not £10,000, he said.
He seemed annoyed he'd been fleeced.
"I got $5,000, which came to a touch over 3,000 sterling.
He eyed Bradshaw nervously.
"What's she doing?"
Poe said.
"What most people don't realize, Mr. Sharples, is that you can delete things from your computer all you want, but everything's recoverable. Tilly here will uncover anything you've written about that Breitling. How long, Tilly?"
"Found it, Poe," she said. "Do you have a printer, Mr. Sharples?"
He opened a cupboard and pressed a button. A green light came on, and the printer whirred and clunked its way to being ready.
"It's wireless," he said.
Bradshaw rolled her eyes and said,
"Duh."
She printed off some documents. She handed them to Poe without looking at them. He flicked through them. They were colour, and the first few pages were good, certainly enough to secure Sharples's conviction. But it wasn't until the last two that he hit the motherlode. The buyer had wanted to see what he was buying, and Sharples had been happy to oblige. 6 full-colour photographs,
three to a page. It was the fifth that made Poe smile. It was of the back of the watch, and there, as clear as day, was its unique serial number. Chapter 24. They left Sharples, but told him to stay where he was. Uniformed officers would be coming for him. They would be, but not for a while, and not until Poe had finished chasing down the watch's original owner. Poe told Bradshaw that, as he was officially on leave, she should head back to Shap, but she was keen to see through the Breitling line of inquiry. Poe relented. They decided to grab breakfast from the Sainsbury's Cafe. Poe chose the full English, and Bradshaw got the vegetarian equivalent. They shared a pot of tea. As the bacon broke over his tongue, a salty flavour like a bomb in his mouth, they discussed the best way to track down the watch's owner. Bradshaw wanted Poe to go straight to Breitling. She'd assumed there'd be a central database somewhere. But he had reservations. They were a big company, with clients all over the world, and some of them would be extremely wealthy. Breitling weren't going to breach their confidentiality policy just because some dickhead from the NCA asked them. Instead, he planned to hit the country's high-value dealers and frighten them until they gave him what he wanted. There weren't many, and if Tolland Mann had been a Cumbrian, it was possible the watch had been bought locally. As he was mopping up egg yolk with a bit of fried bread, Bradshaw asked him why he was taking leave, now of all times.
"Just need a bit of time, Tilly."
"Are you sure it's not because of me, Poe?"
"What? No, of course not. Why would it be about you?"
"People get sick of me."
"Well, if they do, they're idiots," he said. "No. The real reason is because last night, DCS Gamble asked me to leave his investigation."
"Is that why D.I. Stephanie Flynn rang me to say I was to help if you asked?"
"I didn't know she had."
"She said I wasn't to tell you."
"But..."
"Friends should never lie to each other, Poe."
He nodded thoughtfully.
"Come on. Eat your sawdust. The shops will be open soon."
As they'd been talking, Bradshaw had taken advantage of the store's free Wi-Fi. She'd been trying to shorten the search by finding jewelers with staying power, those who'd been around for a long time. She'd collated a list, then switched to a news channel. It was 9 o'clock and the headlines were on. Bradshaw's mouth opened as she stared at the screen.
"No, no, that's not right at all," she cried.
"What isn't?" Poe said, absent-mindedly, as he chased a snide baked bean around the plate with his knife.
"Look at this, Poe."
She turned the tablet round so they could both see it. She turned up the volume and pressed play. In the middle of a scrum of cameras and oversized microphones, wearing a clean suit as if he hadn't just spent 3 hours in a Kendall graveyard, was Gamble. The news anchor led into the interview by saying, "Police have said that the body found in a grave in Kendall early this morning could be another victim of the serial murderer known as the Immolation Man. We'll now go live to Cumbria, where Detective Chief Superintendent Ian Gamble will be making a short statement." Gamble had been waiting for the go-ahead, and he started speaking as soon as the anchor finished.
"After some exceptional police work by Cumbrian detectives, the investigation team applied for an exhumation order for a grave in the Parkside Cemetery in Kendall. We had reason to believe that a coffin that should have contained the unidentified body found at the Hardendale salt store last year had been recently tampered with. As expected, the coffin's original occupant was missing. In its place was the body of an as-yet-unidentified male who we believe to be a victim of the Immolation Man."
Gamble's statement was concise, well-written, didn't contain a single lie, and was total bullshit. The NCA wouldn't dare contradict him. They wouldn't risk exposing their own fault lines. Poe had seen to that.
"Prick," said Poe. "Come on, let's get going."
Although he knew the watch could have been bought anywhere, Poe planned to start looking in Carlisle, as they were already there. If he were lucky, it had been bought before online shopping took off, when people tended to buy high-end items in person. He was happy to discount the cheaper stores and focus his efforts on the smaller, upmarket chains and family-owned businesses. There was only a handful of smaller shops that sold watches, although, to be thorough, they would check the ones that didn't in case they used to sell watches. But even so, they were soon struggling. Every shop except one was happy to let Bradshaw into their records, and the one that didn't was able to confirm that they'd never sold Breitlings, new or second-hand. The serial number, BR-050608, wasn't on any of the computer databases they checked, and because very few of them had transferred their paper records to electronic, searching old ledgers was slow and laborious. One jeweller smiled as he dumped 10 ledgers on his table, each one thicker than a copy of Yellow Pages. Poe groaned, although it didn't seem to faze Bradshaw. She had the kind of analytical mind that relished things like cross-referencing lists. However, effort didn't guarantee outcome. After she'd finished the 7th and final ledger in a shop that might have sold Breitlings a few years ago, Poe called a halt. It was lunchtime, and standing around doing nothing had made him hungry. They walked to the car and bought another parking ticket before wandering over to a little-known old-school coffee shop he'd recently discovered in Carlisle. Coffee Genius was down St. Cuthbert's Lane, near the medieval west walls. It had a high counter, expensive-looking chrome machines, and plenty of homemade cakes and scones. They roasted their own beans, and it was a coffee snob's paradise. Poe found the smells intoxicating. Freshly brewed coffee, the acrid smell of espresso, sweet, warm caramel and chocolate, a tingle of cinnamon. His mouth watered as soon as he walked in. It was full of the lunchtime crowd, but they found a seat near a window. Poe ordered a slow-brewed Peruvian black and the club sandwich of the day, pulled pork and caramelized onions. Bradshaw ordered a hot chocolate before asking him if she was allowed the meal deal, soup and a sandwich.
"Get what you want, Tilly. My treat."
She nodded happily and placed her order. Like birds flitting from branch to branch, her eyes were everywhere, taking in all the new experiences. Her mother had told Poe she'd led a sheltered life before joining Eskas, but he had no idea just how sheltered. As they waited for their food and drinks, Bradshaw asked what he thought about the morning's search.
"It's a fool's errand," Poe said.
He was beginning to doubt the course of action they were on. It had felt like a wasted morning.
"It's not, Poe," she said. "It's just going to take time. If it's out there, I'll find it."
And with that, she begged the Wi-Fi password from the barista and took out her tablet. Within seconds, she was immersed in something. Poe knew he wouldn't get another word from her until the food arrived. The barista came over with the drinks and placed a small triple egg timer on the table. The sand on Poe's right was for a strong brew, and he watched as it slowly ran down. It was therapeutic, and he could feel his mind unwinding. He'd have to get one. When it ran out, he poured his coffee. The sandwiches arrived 10 minutes later. Bradshaw photographed her food and texted the picture to her mum.
"She likes to know what I'm doing," she explained.
Poe, who was getting used to her eccentricities, kept his own counsel. She arranged her napkin to her liking, then took a bite from her sandwich.
"This is nice, isn't it, Poe? I usually eat lunch on my own."
When they'd finished, they ordered more hot drinks. One of the things he liked about Coffee Genius was that the staff were always happy to stop and chat. While Bradshaw worked, Poe and the barista talked about the benefits of buying your own beans and grinding them at home.
"What do you do?"
the barista asked. Poe told him, but left the details a bit fuzzy.
"We're searching for the owner of an old watch today."
The barista sat down, and without mentioning the murder angle, Poe explained.
"All a bit needle in a haystack, isn't it?"
the barista said.
"Tell me about it,"
the barista laughed.
"And that's not even including the shops that don't exist anymore. Got no way of searching for them online."
The barista huddled up to him.
"There's a man and his wife come in here a couple of times a week. He's retired now, but I'm sure he used to work in the jewellery business. And the reason I know is that I've just got engaged, and he advised me on which jewellers wouldn't rip me off."
"You got a name?"
"Charles. His wife's called Jackie, I think."
He looked over his shoulder.
"The boss is in.
She might know. I'll go and ask her. 2 minutes later, he returned with a bit of paper. Charles Nolan. The boss says they come in most Saturdays and Wednesdays. Think they do the shopping in Marks and Spencer. If you leave your name and number, I can pass him a message if you want. Poe declined. He didn't have the time to wait. He excused himself and walked outside to make a call. Killian Reed answered immediately.
"Oi, oi, it's Burke and Hare," Reed said without preamble.
"Ah, fucking ah," Poe replied. "I kept you out of it, didn't I? And I saw Gamble preening about on TV this morning. He knows I did him a favour."
"Like that matters. He's still fucking furious."
"I need another favour," Poe said.
"Okay," Reed said. "Aren't you supposed to be on leave?"
He was wary. If Gamble had found out Reed had passed in the information for the exhumation order, it could have meant his job.
"I am. It's just something I'm following up on. Nothing that'll raise any eyebrows."
"Going to need more than that, mate."
Poe was reluctant to tell him. Reed was his friend, but he was also a bloody good cop. If he thought the investigation team were better equipped, he'd have no qualms about pulling the plug on him.
"Best you don't know, Killian."
"Prick," he said. "I meant I'm going to need more than just I need another favour. I need to know what the fucking favour is."
Chapter 25. Within the hour, Reed had emailed Poe a list of all C. Nolans, Charlie Nolans and Charles Nolans registered for council tax in Cumbria. There were 14. He passed the list to Bradshaw, who asked how she could refine it. That was easy enough. Excluding motorway services, there were only 4 Marks and Spencer stores in Cumbria. He told Bradshaw to remove anyone who lived in West Cumbria or Eden. They'd use the Workington or Penrith stores for their regular shopping. For the same reason, he told her to remove anyone living below Junction 39 on the M6 corridor. The Kendall store served the bottom half of the county. That left the Carlisle area and reduced the list to 4. One lived in the city centre, and Poe discounted them. Retired jewellers were more likely to live in one of the 1,001 picturesque villages dotted around Cumbria, not in the middle of a grubby city. One lived in Brampton, and the other 2 lived in villages, one in Warwick Bridge and the other in Cwm Winton. On the basis that it could be any of them, Poe decided to start with the nearest Nolan, then work outwards. C. Nolan in Warwick Bridge would be first. It was a nice village just outside Carlisle. They'd then move on to the other C. Nolan in Cwm Winton and turn back for the Charles Nolan in Brampton. They got lucky on the first go, although, as Poe said to Bradshaw, when you've narrowed your search to just 4 people, how lucky is it? The man who answered the door was genteel and polite. He was in his early 60s. He wore a frayed cardigan, thick-lens spectacles, and a broad smile. When they confirmed that they were the Nolans who frequented Coffee Genius twice a week, his wife put the kettle on and insisted they stay for some cake.
"Washington, eh? There's an ambassadorial name, if ever there was one. I can just imagine it being mentioned in high-stakes diplomatic dispatches, a sort of name that stops war being declared. There's a fascinating story behind it, no doubt."
"Everyone's a fucking ornithologist."
"You don't know, do you, Poe?"
Bradshaw said, unwittingly rescuing him. Poe smiled at her and shook his head.
"That's right, Tilly. I don't."
"Ah," Nolan said. "Then how can I help you?"
"We're trying to trace a watch," Poe said.
"Not high-stakes diplomacy, then?"
"Definitely not. My boss would be keen to tell you that diplomacy isn't the strongest part of my character," Poe said, taking a bite of the excellent cake. He told Nolan his problem.
"I assume this watch has been stolen?"
"Of a fashion," Poe replied.
"And the National Crime Agency gets involved with thefts, do they?"
he asked, with a twinkle in his eyes. Poe said nothing.
"Sorry. Of course, I'll help if I can. I used to own 3 shops, and I like to think we had some of the better ones."
"What happened?"
He flexed his hand.
"Arthritis, I'm afraid. Curse of the jeweller. That and fading eyesight meant I couldn't hold or see anything smaller than a penny. I sold up. The shops are all gone now.
One of them is now Coffee Genius, which is why we go there.
He sighed.
Still, I did well.